The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating over 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business. On June 2, 2010, the Korea Society hosted a forum on the pending Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. The event featured a distinguished panel of experts, including Thomas F. McLarty, President of McLarty Associates and former Chief of Staff for President Bill Clinton, His Excellency Han Duck-soo, Korean Ambassador to the United States, Michael Wirth, Executive Vice President, Global Downstream, Chevron, and Dr. Victor Cha, Senior Advisor and Korea Chair at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Director for Asian Affairs with the National Security Council under President George W. Bush. The panel examined the strategic and economic implications of the Free Trade Agreement, as well as its significance for the U.S.-Korea relationship. The discussion was moderated by the Korea Society's Chairman, Ambassador Thomas C. Hubbard.
Very pleased to welcome all of you this afternoon for this discussion of a very important issue, that is the free trade agreement between the United States and Korea that was signed some 3 years ago, but is not yet approved by Congress or, for that matter, by the Korean National Assembly. We thought this would be a good time to discuss the FTA, partly because we're having our Korea Society annual dinner tonight, and we thought many of you would be in town for that purpose. But one of the reasons that we're having the dinner this month is that this month, June, represents the 60th anniversary of the beginning of the Korean War. We're having a number of Korean War veterans tonight, including General Taek Sun-yup, the leading South Korean general of the Korean War, but a lot of others as well. So we thought it was a good time to kind of think about this alliance between the United States and Korea that has developed through the years, both from its origins in the Korean War and in the way that it has developed, particularly in recent years, with South Korea's great success in the world, both in terms of establishing democracy and building a very vibrant economy. A chance to discuss where we are and where we ought to go. We've often talked about the FTA in very economic terms, and it deserves to be talked about in economic terms. It's a very good agreement in those terms. But it also has very, I believe, very profound strategic implications in terms of this alliance we have between our two countries, and in terms of the place of the United States in Asia and of the cooperation between the United States and Korea in that region. In recent weeks, of course, we've been reminded of the importance of the alliance. The sinking of a South Korean naval vessel by a North Korean torpedo, resulting in the death of 46 South Korean sailors, is a very sad and tragic event that I think, at least in my case, brings to mind the makes even more important this alliance that we have, and I think makes it even more important that we continue the process of expanding that alliance into the economic arena by putting into place as soon as we can the CORUS FTA. We have a very distinguished panel to speak this afternoon, led by Korean Ambassador Han Duck-soo, who will give a keynote address. I think Ambassador Han really deserves or needs no introduction, requires no introduction. He is Mr. South Korean civil servant, public servant. He's been prime minister, deputy prime minister. He's been minister of trade. He's been ambassador to the OECD, has had a long career focusing largely on exactly the kind of trade and economic issues that that we are working with here. And Ambassador Han has been speaking all around the United States. Tomorrow, I think you're speaking in Texas, if I'm correct. You can find no more effective advocate of this agreement than Ambassador Han. We also have three other panelists today. We have Mr. Mike Worth, who is the Executive Vice President for Global Downstream of the Chevron Corporation. As he will tell you, Chevron Downstream has very important operations in Korea. Mike has been involved both directly and indirectly working on that project with Chevron and with some of the predecessor companies, Caltex, that became Chevron. We have also my boss, Mac McClarty, McClarty Associates. Mac, as many of you know, was chief of staff at the White House under President Bill Clinton. He was there when we concluded the negotiations of NAFTA, was part of the effort to get that done. He worked very closely on Korean affairs in a variety of ways, visited Korea, among other things, to attend the inauguration of President Kim Dae-jung. I think Mac will be able to give us a perspective on how things like this free trade agreement are dealt with by the White House, dealt with in the body politic. Mac is, not surprisingly, a Democrat, but he has also worked very closely with Republican administrations through the years, served on various advisory boards for President Bush, and he was on the transition advisory committee for the White House and the transition from President Bush to President Obama. And finally, we have Dr. Victor Cha. I think he is the rising star of the Korean policy analysts in the United States. You've read many of his articles in the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, and elsewhere. Victor holds the Korea chair at CSIS in Washington. He also is a professor at Georgetown, and I think Victor can bring us a very clear foreign policy perspective on this issue. We're going to begin with a brief presentation by Ambassador Han. After that, I'll ask each of the other panelists if they want to comment on that presentation. After that, we'll have something of a colloquy up here where I will ask various panelists questions, and then we'll leave open a half an hour, if possible, for questions from the audience. So let me just turn right away to Ambassador Han.
Thank you for the very good words, Ambassador Herbert. Thank you for the generous introduction and for inviting me to take part in this event. It's an honor to be in such a distinguished company today and to have the opportunity to share my thoughts on today's event's main topic. The focus of our event today is the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreements and the importance of its ratification for Korea-U.S. relations. However, given the serious situation that prevails on the Korean Peninsula, I think it is necessary for me to begin with a few minutes on the Cheonan tragedy because of its implications for U.S.-Korea relations. This deplorable incident illustrates how important the partnership between our two nations is to ensure peace and security on the Korean Peninsula and the Northeast Asia. Also, this will help us to better appreciate the strategic value of the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreements. I will give a brief summary of the results of the multinational investigation and the response of the Korean government to do the sinking of the Korean naval warship and then discuss the implications of the crisis with reference to the free trade agreements. On March 26, 2010, the China naval warship started sinking about 1 mile nautical mile off the southwest coast of Pengyang Islands in the Yellow Sea. The South Korean government immediately began intensive search and rescue efforts. 58 crew members were rescued, and 46 were found dead or missing. Soon thereafter, we launched the International Joint Investigation Group, comprising 74 civilian and military experts from South Korea, United States, the United Kingdom, Australia, and Sweden. President Lee strongly emphasized from the beginning that the investigation must be conducted in an objective and scientific manner. On May 20, 2010, the group agreed and announced that the Cheonan was sunk by a North Korean torpedo attack. It is clear that the sinking of the Cheonan constitutes a military provocation against the Republic of Korea by North Korea. From this tragic incident, we learn two lessons. First, we should not tolerate any provocative act by North Korea in the future. To this end, South Korea has already taken several stern measures, including suspension of inter-Korean trade and exchanges, prohibition of North Korean ship passage in South Korea's waters, and referral to the issue to the United Nations Security Council. The ultimate goal of these resolute actions is not military confrontation. These actions will prevent such a provocation from recurring and hold North Korea accountable. Therefore, our response is aimed at building true peace and permanent stability on the Korean Peninsula. The second lesson is that Republic of Korea and the United States alliance remains a solid and indispensable cornerstone of peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula. The alliance has played a critical role during the course of the rescue and investigation. For example, immediately after the explosion, the U.S. Navy rushed 4 naval ships to the Yellow Sea to help rescue survivors. In the White House statement released on May 24th, President Obama ordered his military commanders to work closely with their Korean counterparts to deter future aggression. This full backing clearly showed that our two nations are united in dealing with the Cheonan incidents, enabling Seoul to maintain its firm and stern position toward North Korea. Through the Cheonan incident, the South Korean people realized anew that the ROK-US alliance is relevant and significant today. The alliance is the ultimate tool for ensuring peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula. This renewed focus on the alliance requires detailed action and a comprehensive strategy. As part of this detailed action, President Lee stressed in his special address on May 24th that the Korea-U.S. joint combat readiness needs to be further strengthened on the basis of the strong Korea-U.S. alliance. As part of a comprehensive strategy, we should look at broader aspects of this partnership. I believe that the Korea-U.S. free trade agreements will be one of the pillars of this comprehensive strategy. This is because the agreements will enrich the economic and political grounds that nurture the overall relationship between our two nations. It is beyond doubt that the FTA will revive our own economies, and this will rejuvenate our economic partnership. Here is how. Let's look at the specific economic benefits that the FTA will bring to us. The agreements will create a more open market and provide wider opportunities in Korea for American businesses by removing tariff and non-tariff barriers to trade. 80% of South Korean tariffs will fall to zero the moment the agreements take effect. 94% will be eliminated within 3 years after ratification. This would create billions of dollars in new U.S. exports to Korea. The U.S. International Trade Commission found that the U.S. exports of manufactured and agricultural goods to Korea would increase by $10 billion to $12 billion within 4 years of the FTA's ratification. According to the U.S. Commerce Department's estimate, that every $1 billion in new exports creates 6,000 jobs, the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreements will add as many as 72,000 new jobs just in its first 4 years. But if it fails to implement the Free Trade Agreements, while other countries go forward with their own FTAs with Korea, the United States will lose some 345,000 jobs, $35 billion in export growth, and $40 billion in GDP growth. This is what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce found in November of last year. These figures do not reflect the Korea-U.S. FTA's dynamic impacts on cross-border investments between our two economies. In recent years, Korea's investments in the U.S. have grown and have brought the cascade of new jobs in manufacturing, distribution, and supply networks, and retail businesses across the United States. For example, according to a Georgia Tech study, the newly opened Kia automotive plant in West Point, Georgia, will create more than 20,000 jobs and 140 new businesses in areas nearby. It's true that the Kia plant builds much more than high-quality cars. By introducing the trend of expanding Korean investments in the United States, the porous FTA will add more and more new jobs. I hope these numbers would convince the American people and members of Congress that the free flow of trade and investments does not lead to domestic unemployment. Many seem to be listening. Last November, 44 Democrats and 44 Republicans signed a letter to President Obama asking him to submit the agreements to Congress as soon as possible. Senators John Kerry and Richard Lugar, chairman and ranking member respectively of the Foreign Relations Committee at the Senate, sent the president a similar letter last month. Most encouragingly, about 92% of the public comments submitted to USDR about the Korea's FTA were positive. All the economic benefits of the Korea's FTA will revive our economic partnership, which used to be one of the strongest in the world. Since the end of the Korean War, the United States has long been South Korea's largest trading partner. However, since 2003, the U.S. position in the Korean market has been drifting downward. Today, the United States lags behind China, Japan, and European Union in its volume of trade with Korea. Some worry that this downturn will undermine the security partnership between our two nations, which helps to maintain order in Northeast Asia. But I don't see it that way. True, the U.S. quantitative grip on the Korean market has weakened, but if you look at the quality of our economic relationship, you see that it has been evolving from a labor-intensive to a high-tech intensive structure. Nonetheless, we should not entirely ignore the concerns that have been expressed. We may find that structural innovation in our economic relationship may not be strong enough to prevent potential negative impact generated by this downward trend. Therefore, new economic dynamics need to be created to reinforce our economies and refresh our economic partnership. It is no doubt that the FTA will meet the need. We should note that the benefits that the FDA will give our economies, are not just economic and commercial, but also geostrategic and geopolitical. First, the CORUS FTA will anchor the U.S. strategic economic position in East Asia and cement its leadership in the most dynamic and rapidly growing economic region in the world. Second, these agreements will serve as a solid pillar for the alliance in the 21st century, just as the Mutual Defense Treaty did during the last half century. It'll be a new bond that holds our two countries tighter. Third, it will help ensure the Korea-U.S. partnership remains a vital force for stability at a time of change and challenge, where the significance of the balance of power is growing in the broader security landscape of Northeast Asia. It will lay the foundation of the infrastructure that President Obama pledged to build with partners in East Asia to promote stability and prosperity. As you know, this year, we commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. It was 60 years ago this month that the war broke out on the Korean Peninsula. The war's end, 3 years later, gave rise to the modern U.S.-Korea Strategic Alliance, which preserves to this day. The painful lesson of the Cheonan incidents shows us that the unity is now as important as ever. As the sacrifice of the young American and Korean soldiers during the Korean War were not in vain, we should not let the sacrifice of young sailors of the Cheonan be forgotten. To this end, Korea and the U.S. are sending a clear message to North Korea that we will not tolerate any future provocative act by North Korea, and we will make every effort to secure peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. I'd now like to ask my colleagues on the panel if they have any comments they would like to make following on Ambassador Han's statement.
Well, I certainly would. As one of the largest U.S. investors in South Korea, Chevron strongly supports passage of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. We've been a partner in the energy industry in the Republic of Korea for nearly 50 years and plan to be a partner there for many decades to come. We've got over $10 billion invested in one entity, GS Caltex, formerly LG Caltex. The Yeosu refinery is one of the five largest refineries on the planet and critically important to our ability to serve the growing economies of Asia. We're a major customer of Korean shipyards. We've got seven large ships on order right now for liquefied natural gas transportation with both Samsung Heavy Industries and Daewoo Shipbuilding and Marine Engineering. And we've got over $2 billion in fabrication underway with Hyundai Heavy Industries in support of major investments we're making in the region, primarily in gas development in Western Australia, much of which will be exported to North Asia, Japan and Korea most significantly. And we've entered into long-term gas supply agreements between our entity in Australia and KOGAS to provide natural gas. The longest agreements, the first actually between Australia and Korea and the longest agreements that we've signed up thus far. So we really believe that the free trade agreement will strengthen the strategic relationship between the countries and most importantly for us as a large investor, provide investment protections for an industry that makes investments on the scale of decades that come measured not in millions of dollars, but billions of dollars, and they have lifespans that go out over many, many decades. So the investment certainty and the strong investment chapter in this free trade agreement, we believe is vitally important and really sets a standard for other similar agreements. So we've been working hard on the Hill. About a year ago in this building, President Lee assigned me the responsibility for Speaker Pelosi's vote. As a California company, he overestimated the amount of influence that we might have with the Speaker. But we have been working very hard with numerous members of both the House and the Senate to express our support for the agreement, and we'll continue to do so.
Thank you very much, Mike. Mac?
Well, Ambassador Hubbard, first of all, it's good to be with you and your colleagues here at the U.S.-Korea Business Council and the Korea Society. Ambassador Han, I thought, as usual, presented such a thoughtful, purposeful, concrete, but also overarching commentary, and made the case in a compelling manner, both from an economic standpoint in terms of job creation, in terms of the specific issues of tariff and non-tariff barriers, in terms of investment, both U.S. into South Korea, as Chevron and others have done, and South Korean companies investing here in the United States and creating jobs and kind of that multiplier effect that Ambassador Han alluded to. But also, very importantly, Tom, as you well know, given your distinguished career, trade agreements also have a very important element of foreign policy, which Ambassador Han talked about. And in this case, clearly very timely to this gathering, not only the 60th anniversary, but to the very concerning and sad and incident that has recently occurred, the security aspects in a region that is so vital to our United States interest. So I think at the end of the day, if you step back and think about it, most successful presidencies here and leadership in other countries, at the end of the day, usually are determined by peace and prosperity. Now, there's a lot of other factors, but those are the two pillars, if you will. And to me, you can make a very strong case that our relationship with South Korea is critical. Absolutely critical from a security standpoint, maintaining stability and peace in Asia and around the world, because South Korea clearly is a global player, but is obviously such a key leading player in Asia. And from a prosperity standpoint, you simply, in my judgment, are not going to be able to grow our economy as someone who's been involved in Main Street and Wall Street and took partial leave of my senses and served in Washington in public service for a while, you're not going to be able to create jobs in this new economy without the building of our export base. So for all of those reasons, I think Ambassador Han made the case. I'm sure Tom will have an opportunity to talk about the politics, which Mike has already alluded to in his comments.
I thought you were going to accept his responsibility.
be glad to share it.
If I thought I could discharge that responsibility, I would. but I better pause for the moment.
Victor?
Well, thank you. It is a pleasure to be here to share the stage with these very distinguished panelists. Let me just say a couple of things. The first is that I worked in the Bush administration on the NSC staff for 3 years and saw about the announcement of the beginning of the trade talks with Korea and also its final conclusion. So at a personal level, I want this to go well. Also at a personal level, I went to school with President Obama at Columbia. We graduated the same year at Columbia College. So at a personal level, I want him to do well. And I think the free trade agreement's passage and his doing well work together. These things do not work in opposite directions. I think this agreement will pass, and I think when people look back on it, they will see certain key points that were important. The first point I think that was very important was President Obama's first trip to Asia in November of last year when he went to APEC. And as Mac McLarty and others at this, in this group know, a big part of these multilateral gatherings are these side bilats that individual leaders do with the President of the United States. My understanding, in each of those bilats, President Obama was asked a question by, every Asian leader started by saying, "We love you. You're great. We like you a lot better than the last guy." And the second thing they would say is, "Well, we're a little bit concerned because we don't know what the United States trade policy is." And I think that made a real impact on him personally when he left Asia. Second big point, as we were talking about at lunch, was the State of the Union speech this past year, where President Obama talked about national exports and a national export initiative to create jobs. And that was really the first connection that I heard this administration make between free trade and the creation of jobs. And I think that was a very important point. And then the third, I think, is this Chun'an incident. For one, the incident and the way President Lee has handled it has, I think, increased the Obama administration's already very high respect they had for this South Korean leader. And I think overall they believe this is their strongest relationship in Asia today, and they want to keep it strong and take it to the next level. And that would mean the free trade agreement. The other aspect of this is, of course, the Chun'an, there are countermeasures that we're all well aware of that Ambassador Han talked about that will be taken by the South Koreans, by the USROK alliance, and then most likely here in New York at the UN Security Council. But in the broader sense, one of the best deterrents to further North Korean provocations is a North Korean perception that this alliance between the U.S. and South Korea is deep, is very strong, and is only growing even stronger. And I think in that context, the free trade, the argument for the free trade agreement becomes even stronger. The final thing that I would say on a broader strategic level is, putting on my academic hat, you know, great powers throughout world history have been great not just because of their military capabilities. They've been great in large part because they also provide public goods to the international system. One of the things that made the United States a great power in the world after World War II was not just the provision of security, but the support of free trade. And that's still very much the case today. When people talk about a rising China in Asia, and the questions of whether the United States has seen its best days behind them already in Asia, I mean, a very important aspect of this will be the U.S. position on free trade. And I think one of the reasons that all these leaders asked President Obama what his position on trade was not just administration-specific. They were thinking in longer-term trends and concerns that if the United States starts closing in, that will be one very important pillar of its position in Asia that will start to dissipate. So I think that overall that is not the future for the United States in Asia, that it will remain and continue to be a very strong leader and Asia-Pacific power. And a big part of that will be free trade. So I think in the end, the story will be a good one. We will have some rough chapters, and we've had some rough chapters. But I think in the end, it will be a happy ending.
Well, Mike, I think where Victor ended there might be a good place to begin a second round with you. You mentioned how important your downstream facilities in Korea are to your regional presence, your ability to operate in Asia. And I wondered if you had any further comments on this question of, you know, can U.S., or, you know, how can the U.S. use free trade to continue to maintain our strength in this Asian region that is so important to you?
Well, maybe a couple broad comments on energy markets. And certainly energy and oil have been in the news a lot more lately for reasons that we would, you know, we would hope that wouldn't be. But if you look at Mac's comments about peace and prosperity, economic development requires energy to support development. And this world needs more energy in the future than it uses today. Over the next 20 years in the OECD, energy demand will grow only about 15%. In the non-OECD, it will go up over 50%. And so the growth is being driven by the development of the non-OECD markets. We have a very large position as our company in the Pacific Rim in our refining business, including the refinery at Yeosu, which is very well positioned to support and feed into this growing demand for energy. Likewise, in our upstream business, our exploration and production business, we're the largest holder of oil and gas resources in the Asia-Pacific region among all of the non-state-owned oil companies. So if you take PetroChina and Sinopec out of it, we're the largest international oil company in terms of oil and gas holdings and are investing an enormous amount of money to bring supplies to the market in these emerging regions of the world. I mentioned Australian gas dedicated to Korea. We have one gas development project underway in Western Australia, which will cost us $37 billion to bring on stream. The largest investment we've made in the history of our company. And much of the support for that will come from Korea, and much of the gas will flow back to Korea and to other economies in the region. And so for us, it's vitally important to continue to invest in bringing reliable, safe, and affordable energy to the world, that we have strong relationships where we make these investments. Energy flows really don't know borders, and we need to operate across many, many different geographies in the world. And having strong, as I said before, strong investment language in these kinds of agreements gives us the confidence to make those investments to help support the economic development throughout the region.
Well, Mac, you know, we've heard from Ambassador Han, from Mike Work, Victor, nothing but praise for this agreement between U.S. and South Korea. It seems like a good deal for us, a good deal for Korea, and certainly a good deal for our presence in the world. If it's such a good deal, why hasn't it already been approved, and what do we have to do to get it there?
Well, Ambassador Hubbard, I think you've got a majority on this panel for the agreement. I think that's true. And I wish there were a silver bullet, so to speak, or a magic wand that one could wave to make the passage of usually any major piece of legislation, but certainly trade agreements, which have a history of being complicated and difficult for all the reasons that many in this room will understand in quite a serious and depthful way. Tom, I think there's a couple of points here. I think, one, this is a very good agreement for the United States and for South Korea. I think it's been thoughtfully negotiated. I think the points have been developed in a way that puts the entire agreement in the right context. I think there'll obviously need to be some further consultation, as there almost always is on any trade agreement, in two or three key areas, in this case agricultural commodities, certain agricultural commodities, and automobiles. But having said that, you've got two or three things that are problems, that are complications. Number one, you have the timing of this, as we were visiting about at lunch. We, of course, have our midterm elections right around the corner, and a highly fluid, volatile, unpredictable political landscape here in the United States. Number two, we obviously looked at the abyss and took a step back from an economic standpoint not too very long ago. That clearly heightened anxiety levels here in the United States and to some degree around the world. And you have still high unemployment, particularly high unemployment in certain geographic sectors, congressional districts, and among certain demographics. That makes a trade agreement more difficult. So you have a timing issue, a sequencing issue in the White House and with Congress, as well as the political landscape. Having said that, I do think, and I was encouraged because Victor is a very thoughtful observer of not only international and foreign affairs, but of the political landscape. And I was encouraged by his comments. I think he's got it right. I think President Obama and his administration have put down a very clear marker about how they are positioning trade and exports going forward. And I believe at the end of the day, given the strength of this agreement and the overarching importance of it, and the fact that we indeed will fall behind in the most, at this point, prosperous area, growing area of the world, the case really becomes a compelling one. So I am optimistic at the end of the day, would wager a good bet of its passage, but might hedge it slightly.
Ambassador Hahn, do you have any comments on what's been said so far?
Well, I would like to raise just two questions. One, how to persuade the general public and the members of Congress. We need a tremendous effort on this. It's so clear when we look at Korea-U.S. free trade agreements. I said at the lunch, but I was actively participated in all the negotiations from the beginning to the end. I can definitely tell you that on the negotiating table, agendas that should be negotiated are all from U.S. business, not a single one from Korean business. There was only one which was outrightly rejected by U.S. negotiators on anti-dumping duty and countervailing duty investigation. They said that it's not within their purview of the authorities, but it's within the purview of the authorities of the Congress. So I can definitely say that in terms of economic benefits in the short and medium term, this agreement is completely in favor of U.S. businesses. I'm really always surprised to know that, you know, such a distinguished businessman as Chairman Gale has some problems in his implementations of the investments projects in Korea. If this agreement has been put into place, he has all the tools, he might have had all the tools to resort to in compelling the governments, whether they are central and local, to be more favorable toward his businesses. Or he can go to the dispute settlement mechanisms where government should do the compensations and so on. In the pharmaceuticals, they are always have the complaints that they are not fully participating in the economic, policy-making procedures. That is exactly within this agreement, that when Korean government is making the policy, the businesses should get involved. For the finances, some finance companies are complaining that although we would like to invest, the authorities may not want their investments here in the United States. In this agreement, there's a clear provision that government should not do any kind of economic feasibility test, whether some investment should be made or not. It's not the government. It should be the decision of the private sector. So from my point of view, if this agreement is put into effect, maybe 98% of all the complaints of U.S. businesses will be gone. If I set that in Seoul, we will have our political problem. But I can definitely tell you that the governments and the persons who propel these agreements has one single point on mind. That is, with this high level of protection on agricultural products, Korea can never be an advanced, modernized, and G20 country. Mm-hmm. We should eliminate some part of it. And without, importing a lot of competition, really strong competition from the United States through investments or through imports, our industry can never be competitive. And without involving the businesses in our policymaking process, Korea's economic institutions cannot be sophisticated.
without having the rightly placed dispute settlement mechanisms, our country can never be a, you know, attractive investment recipient country for foreign investors. Mm-hmm. That's what we would like to achieve. Mm-hmm. So in the medium term, yes, our trade balance will be in favor of the United States. But in medium and long term, globally, we will have more trade. We will have more, you know, balance in trade, but not with the United States. So I really would like to deliver that kind of message to our members of Congress and to the business. Two things. One, business should be more active in pushing these businesses. If the chairman, Gail, may say Charles Rangel in New York, he may listen to. He, of course, he may listen to others who oppose this, you know, labor union and others. Mm. But it's very crucial that this agreement has the supporters and strong supporters on the part of U.S. businesses. And you should be really vocal about that. And the second one will be, of course, we should have more strong efforts on the part of our side as well as U.S. governments. So this year, our embassy, including me, with the cooperation of local chamber of commerce, we will visit 50 cities. So from tomorrow at 7, I should start from the hotel at 5:30 in the morning. I should go to the Austin and the San Antonio. And we are gathering, there's a gathering with the participation of the members of Congress, businesses, and scholars, and so on, so that they can be more active on selling these agreements and telling in a proper way to their members of Congress, to their U.S. government's policymakers. Thank
you. I should have mentioned in the introductory portion that today this event is hosted not just by the Korea Society, but we're doing it in cooperation with U.S.-Korea Business Council, which in turn is helping Ambassador Han do these trips around the country and is also supporting the U.S. Business Coalition in favor of the FTA. We have Sean Connell representing the U.S.-Korea Business Council here today. Tammy Overby will be coming in this evening, wasn't able to join us now. Victor, you mentioned the degree to which this White House has admired the way President Lee Myung-bak has handled this Chonan tragedy. I'd like to add my word of admiration as well. But I think Korea has been more active in the world in general, preparing to host later this year the G20 meeting. South Korea will be the first country from outside the old G8 countries to host a G20 meeting. Korea will also be hosting a summit meeting on nuclear security in 2012. So I guess I might ask you, Victor, to comment on how all of this kind of fits together in Korea's new place of real leadership, I think, in the world.
Yeah, I think it's real leadership both in the region and in the world. As everyone in this room knows, Lee Myung-bak came in with this concept of global Korea, in which he wanted Korea to play a larger role on the world stage and not simply be focused on peninsular issues, i.e. simply the problems with North Korea. And that, I think, had a very liberating effect on many of the Korean bureaucracies and I think many of strategic thinkers in Korea, that they could think in a much broader perspective. And we've seen, as you've said, the manifestations of this in terms of G20 hosting, nuclear summits, PRT in Afghanistan, and other sorts of things that the Koreans have been involved in. And Korea's involvement is not just globally, but within the region. It's been a central player in a lot of the new architectures that are being developed in the region. It is looking to negotiate free trade agreements and nearly finished free trade agreements with India and with the EU. There's talk of a plus three free trade agreement between Korea, Japan, and China. So, you know, we always talk about Korea being sort of the cockpit of, during the Cold War, we talked about Korea being sort of the cockpit of insecurity in Asia. And of course, now it's not just the cockpit of insecurity. It's a very important driver of a lot of things that happen. The advantage that the United States has is that it has this time-honored 50, 60-year relationship with one of the most dynamic players in Asia. And I think President Obama appreciates that. I really do think he understands that. Arguably, his relationship with the Republic of Korea is the best relationship that he has in Asia today. And that's something that I think the administration values very much, as it has a very difficult relationship with China, as we've seen from this last meeting of 200 cabinet officials, half of Washington going to China. I guess we can say this in a Korea Society meeting, chaos in Japan, right? in the sense that there really isn't a clear picture of what's going to emerge in Japan politically, and that naturally affects the ability of the United States to work with Japan. So for a number of reasons, Korea plays a very important role in the world, and cementing this agreement on free trade really sort of, it does really take the relationship to another level. I mean, we saw it in terms of the FTAs with Australia and with Singapore. I mean, these things really take the relationship to a different level. And if you combine the FTA with the other things that have been done recently with the West program, with visa waiver, with plus three status for Korea, these are really things that take Korea to a very different level in terms of their relationship with the United States.
Well, I think that's something to really celebrate, even as we commemorate the Korean War, the beginning 60 years ago, and the loss of life together, and we ponder the more recent incident and its tragic loss of life. I wanted to open up to the audience very quickly here, but. Mike, I really appreciate your role and the role of your colleagues at Chevron in helping us put together this lunch today and supporting it. I think it is the first time we've heard from a major investor in Korea on the subject of the FTA, and I just wondered if you had any further comments to make before we open up to the audience.
Well, I would simply echo the strong support that we've heard here on the panel today, and particularly I don't know Mr. Gale's travails, but as an investor around the world, we find many times that dispute resolution, protection of our investments, some sort of compensation when they're expropriated, due process is a real issue. And we have a need to invest, a desire to invest, and the real intent to invest around the world to create jobs, to support economic development, and to help promote peace and prosperity, as Max said. And in order to do that, when you have confidence that you're investing into an environment where there are protections for investors and there is a level playing field, I think it enables all of us in business to pursue those opportunities, to make the decisions that we in the private sector would prefer be made in the private sector, and so we think that this is just an incredibly strong investment chapter in an incredibly strong agreement, and for us as an investor, that sends a great signal of confidence, and I think would certainly facilitate much more activity. And so we're proud to support the Business Council and the Society here today, and we're very proud of our strong relationships in Korea.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. I thought, Stan, your name has been evoked a couple of times. We might we might start the audience participation with Stan Gale, chairman of Gale International, which is building the new Songdo City in China.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom and panel. Apparently, we must face challenges that need additional legislation and help. No doubt about it. In our project. Is this working? Can you hear me?
We certainly can.
Let's try again. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'll go without it.
Yeah.
Ambassador, to see you again, Mac, your conference as well. I would like to put one twist on it that's of the FTA being passed now, which I think is uniquely available this year in these few months. I don't have it. Works. Hello? Hello?
I think
does it work?
Yeah, right into it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice and close to it.
I'll scream right into it. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. there is a unique window between now and the G20 being hosted in Korea. That has to do uniquely with the United States' relationship with Korea, beyond economic, but so recently seen in the security area. I want to flip the question around on the president. President Obama put a twist as such. G20 hosted in Seoul this November. What an oddity that many other countries would have FTAs with Korea. And we actually supported quite heavily, Fred Bergston and others, mm-hmm. having the G20 in Korea as our best friend. And we just went through a huge security incident where when the dust settled, who was really there for Korea? Korea and the United States came closer, actually, together. Mm-hmm. Our military mm-hmm. activities should increase. Because, you look, it's a lonely world out there for Korea, and a lonely world for the United States looking into Asia. So why don't we take a slight spin on this, which is the security aspects and the symbolic nature of these two nations. 60 years ago, MacArthur landing on the shores of Incheon, and on September 15th, Korean War breaking out, June 25th of this year. Think about it. And we're suggesting, and Korea's hosting the G20 in the sovereign nation. Our project being 9 miles, nautical miles from North Korea, we have to make a point. How could there not be a free trade agreement? Okay, not just for Gale or GS Caltex or others, but think about it. It's a very embarrassing, very big weak point of relations between the two. A free trade agreement with other nations, China's doing it with Korea, others are doing it with Korea. Meanwhile, U.S. lags, and the G20 is going to be there. G20 is a U.S. thing. Fred ought to get involved in this and really say, how could we participate in a free trade agreement in Seoul, a G20 event of such proportions right at the border of North Korea and not have a free trade agreement? Okay, I'm just adding one more twist there, and if there is one way, that is a very clear new window into getting the FTA done. So that's my suggestion on that. I don't know how I can help in that regard, but please, Ambassador, I think it's a big missing piece. It's embarrassing. You'll host the G20. It'll be right there, all these nations. And what do you mean? We don't even have a free trade agreement with Korea. So maybe there's this window of time right now, and I offer that as a new suggestion. Matt?
Would you like to offer some comments on the role of action forcing the event?
Action forcing admonishments by Stan Gale. What a great speech. And Stan, I think the point you make is consistent with and reinforces the ambassador's thoughtful remarks. And Tom understands so well that either state visits or major multinational meetings like APEC, which I think Tom began in 1993, was the first leaders meeting of APEC, where we had the privilege to work together. Exactly. That those are action forcing events. Those do present timelines and opportunities. And what you're suggesting is not only a great upside opportunity,
but also the downside, the uncomfortableness, if you will, that here we go to this meeting as a leader and yet don't have a free trade agreement in place. The challenge, Stan, and I think Victor and others have noted it, is probably not to convince the President and the White House and the Secretary of State of those arguments, or Ron Kirk at Ambassador Kirk at USTR. The challenge is to convince the members of Congress of that argument.
Back to Nancy Pelosi.
And that's the challenge. And usually at the end of the day, the way trade agreements are passed are one on the major overarching issues of jobs, investment, job creation, which Ambassador Hahn talked about very specifically. Mike and others have talked about it. Secondly, usually they're geopolitical issues, in this case, very clearly security issues, overall relationship and global leadership. And then there are the smaller, everything is local issues on specific either commodities or issues in a, frankly, a member's district or state that have to be worked through. That's kind of how the cards get dealt and get shuffled and hopefully played in the right manner. And at the end of the day, what this is also going to require in Washington, and I think whether it's the G20 or some other meeting being the catalyst of that, the forcing event, is trade agreements generally do not pass. They certainly do not have the standing they need in our country and around the world if they are not passed on a true bipartisan basis, which is increasingly difficult in the climate in Washington. In the North American Free Trade Agreement, we had a strong bipartisan effort at the end of the day. It was the only time I can remember Newt Gingrich and George Stephanopoulos counting votes together in the Roosevelt Room. And so I hope that this agreement with South Korea is so important, so paramount, major in terms of economics, but much more broadly, that it will bring forth that kind of leadership from the White House, which it's going to take in the President, and that will translate into the Congress with a bipartisan effort. Can we do that so close to the midterm elections, even with this window of opportunity? Certainly worth thinking about, worth trying to consider and doing.
My only point is uniquely, President Obama mimicked almost everything Eamon Box said about the incident.
Yep.
And the torpedo attack.
Right.
Clear, blatant attack.
Right.
On a friend of the United States. So he mimicked the words of support one for one. What a great opportunity for Nancy Pelosi,
mm-hmm.
where we're looking, this
security.
Administration looked and showed points of strength
security.
Against terror,
yeah, security.
Strength against these regimes. And here we have an incident that occurs where easily Obama could get a big lift from and has by backing from a security point of view. How can you say we're going to protect Korea always and be there as a brother and get closer and for some reason not have a free trade agreement with Korea? It seems to me a window could be turned in favor of national security.
Yep.
That was my suggestion.
Big point.
So,
I think it's a good one.
Yeah. Victor,
it's a powerful
yes.
one.
The Clinton administration passed the biggest and most important free trade agreement that we have had thus far, NAFTA. And I think Mac's absolutely right. Bipartisanship is critical to that. I think we're starting to see the pieces of that with regard to CORUS.
Mm-hmm.
An important step, as Ambassador Hubbard noted, was this joint letter by Senator Kerry and Lugar mm-hmm. In support of the agreement, which my understanding was Lugar had drafted a year ago, and Senator Kerry finally signed on to it. So that's, I think, an important step. The other
right.
thing I think is also important
Sounds
is...
Right.
All the arguments that Mr. Gale made are right on the mark, and they're very important for getting administration to change its thinking on the free trade agreement and move it higher up on the agenda. The other thing, though, is it has to also be linked to some broader I mean, the pushing it for Korea and for the sake of the alliance is important, but it also has to be linked to some broader issue, domestic or otherwise, that the administration is pursuing. And I think one thing that does work to the advantage, of course, is sooner or later, this administration is going to have to come up with a new initiative with regard to the economy. And it's most likely not going to be another stimulus package, because I don't think we can do those anymore.
Yeah,
and this is where the National Export Initiative that he announced in the State of the Union may be something that works very well with, you know, moving course forward as part of a larger agenda with regard to the economy.
Yeah. Good.
How about the concept of green growth exports?
That's right. That's right.
Together with
absolutely.
Is one that Eamon Bach has been pushing jointly. So to find some method uniquely during this time period that is a win. I'm thinking of Nancy Pelosi,
window
where she can say this is really a broader vision on our relationship with Asia. What are we going to do about China?
Yeah.
Just think big China there, North Korea, Japan, and there's little Korea. What are we going to do about it? It seems to me we need to be there, and the FTA is that logic, bigger than just purely automobiles. That's the point I was making.
Thank you, Stan. Yeah, I think we can start here.
Hi, my name is Sean King. I work for Al D'Amato, the former senator of New York at Park Strategies. I know we're supposed to talk about the FTA today, but since Ambassador Han so eloquently spoke about the Chang'an incident and Victor mentioned rough patches in U.S.-South Korean relations, I was just going to ask Ambassador Hubbard to reflect a little on what he observes in South Korea today. I'm happy to see that there is some moderate outrage amongst the South Korean public over what happened in the Chang'an, but it's nothing. The intentional killing of 46 South Koreans is nothing compared to the outrage we saw over the accidental killing of two South Korean girls in 2002, and nothing compared to the no deaths we saw from beef in 2008. So looking back on this, maybe wishing you were ambassador now instead of then, I'm just going to ask Ambassador Hubbard to reflect on the current state of South Korean street protests and what he observes from here.
I shouldn't have opened up for broader questions. Well, I should have specified the recipient. I've been thinking about that a lot, too. And I think it is a very complicated psychological question. And I think, you know, probably, you know, the best person to answer it is a Korean. But I think there is something special about incidents involving Koreans, North Koreans, South Koreans, or whatever, themselves, and incidents that involve clear foreigners. I mean, for us sitting here in America, the last 60 years, there have been two Koreas, two different countries. We tend to see it that way. I'm not sure Koreans see it the same way. I do believe Koreans have been very, very deeply affected by the death of 46 sailors. I think South Korea public consciousness has been very deeply affected by the specter of North Korea, you know, carrying out such a blatant attack and its implications for their hopes for reconciliation and peace on the peninsula. I think most South Koreans want peace. Certainly, they don't want escalation of this crisis. They don't want war with North Korea, and it's just kind of very difficult to work through all of that in terms of. I greatly admire the way President Lee has handled this incident, as very aptly described by Ambassador Han today, and I think we'll see various further evolutions of this public consciousness in Korea. I don't want to go back again to the days I was there after the death of the two young girls. Yes, sir.
Tom.
Yes, please. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I just would like to make clear that although there was a big demonstrations on U.S. imported beef and on the death of two girls in the process of the military exercise, and And the fact that there was no such a big demonstrations as in North Korea, 100,000 people gathered, that does not mean at all that most of the South Korean people do not think this heinous act as really bad. There was some discussions that South Koreans, especially young South Koreans, may be more sensitive about the issues where United States is related rather than on the issues where North Korea is related. In terms of the sense of seriousness about the issue, we cannot judge only by that kind of big demonstrations or small demonstrations. We have several such provocations in the past, and sometimes there was a kind of extraordinary kind of big reactions on the part of the Korean South Korean people. Sometimes the demonstrations that was more triggered by a kind of, not by himself or herself, but by some of the organizations and so on. So, in conclusion, I'd like to say that more than 60% of the people think that this is terribly bad accident, you know, bad things that North Korea did. And the approval ratings about, I mean, the degree of fondness for President Obama and for United States was almost around 70, more than, higher than 75%. And in Korea, it was highest, only except Kenya, where President Obama has some affiliations. You know, so that means Korea is the country where the fondness toward Korea and the presidents was highest in the world. So that is the real facts. So we should look at it more in a deeper way rather than on a more conspicuous and
Thank you very much, Ambassador. You said exactly what I was trying to say, but said it much better as a Korean. Yes, sir, back there.
In this 60 years alliance with Korea and United States, is that the first trade agreement are we having? Is there a term for this agreement? Will it be renegotiated? And as Ambassador Han said, the volume of trade has been declining. Mm-hmm. Is it in relative term to Japan, China, and European Union, or in absolute terms? Thank you.
Ambassador Han, would you like to answer that?
Well, definitely the decline in the ranking in terms of the volumes of trade with Korea for the United States is a desirable phenomenon. There's a lot of more potentials for our trade to go much deeper and much more, the trade relationship can be much more strengthened. With these agreements, I think there will be a real boost for our trading relationship, especially on a rather more highly sophisticated products, including the very strong protection of intellectual property rights. So this will be one momentum that U.S. and Korea are thinking anew what their trading and investment relationship should be.
I confess to being the first person to export any product after World War II from Korea to the United States. It was men's white shirts. And I lived there for a while, so I had some experience with quite a while ago. And I moved from soft goods to software. And this July, there is a wonderful conference going on in South Korea, which is taking place in different parts of the world, on system dynamics, which is understanding complex issues, which is what we're discussing, I think, fairly complex issues. I have information about the program. It's in Seoul to the end of July. It was started by the man who originally invented the random access memory, Jay Forrester from MIT, who is still alive at about 94. He will not be there. I'm hoping to be there. but it's a conference that anybody who has to make complex business and political decisions will get a lot out of. And I have the program and the speakers and so forth here if anybody wants to pick up some material on it. And I'm looking forward to being back there if I can make it at my advanced age. My first trip, by the way, was on a DC-6. You know how long that took to get there.
Thank you very much. I go way back in the back of the room there.
Hi. I hate to be a doubter, but I'm not sure where somebody off the I think there are three reasons why I feel. Now, let's see, give you why I'm wrong, why we're going to do that. One, it seems to me that business lobbying in the U.S. has a benefit for some reason. Yes, it has a benefit. It allows a benefit. It allows an additional benefit. A priority issue. Compare all the other issues. For example, we're discussing all the investments you made. I don't recall you saying that some major investment that you would have made, but because the asset of the FCA, you couldn't make. I don't see a strong business lobby for it. I think the business lobby is very lobby, very controlling events in Congress.
And then, I think the
partisan rancor in Washington now so bitter.
The partisan rancor in Washington is now so bitter that I wonder if want to shy away from it because they don't want to give Obama anything that looks like a victory, even after the midterm. And so, for these reasons, I think it's a good agreement and should pass, and hopefully will eventually pass. I don't see in the next year or two the political basis of your optimism of saying that you think it will pass, and I'd love to hear why I'm wrong.
Mike, do you want to start that?
Well, I'm going to leave the political questions for people that are more qualified than me to comment on the politics. I will say you've got a point that I think the business community in this country faces a number of significant issues as we go to Washington. And we need to engage on multiple fronts. We've got an enormous budget imbalance that needs to be resolved. That's got real implications for business. In our particular industry, we've got a whole new issue that has popped up in the last 45 days that's mm-hmm. going to be very important. And so I do think that's a challenge that this faces, is there are a number of issues on the business agenda, there are a number of issues on the political agenda, and bringing the focus to bear, and as we were having a discussion over lunch beforehand, Mac talked a lot about timing, and that on passing one of these things, you really need to sequence things, and the timing needs to be right. And so I think the point you're raising about what is the right timing still remains a real issue.
Mac?
Well, I think the points you raise are fair ones, and you can certainly look at the glass half empty or half full. I think there's something to work with here, though, and I think you do have the basis. The White House and the President have sent a pretty clear signal. They want to move forward on the trade agenda. That's a big shift and a big step, and I think the exports program that the President has laid out is really the marker he's put down. As far as the bipartisan rancor, I unfortunately couldn't agree with you more, and I think the American public is a little schizophrenic on that. We don't like the acrimony and not getting along, but then we perhaps succumb to some of the echo chamber and the news cycle as well. But having said that, I think the strong argument is our standing and strength around the world and our security here at home And that makes it pretty difficult, I think, to oppose a piece of legislation if it's presented in the right manner. I think finally, you are going to have to develop a better storyline, if you will, a better substantive presentation and approach about the jobs issue here at home and unemployment. Exports is fine, but that's got to be developed in a much sharper, stronger way if this is going to pass, in my judgment. Finally, in terms of the business community, obviously Ambassador Hahn's going on his political tour of sorts, trying to mobilize that support. I think this is a large enough agreement in terms of the economics, and certainly an important enough agreement in terms of the security issues and the foreign policy issues that the business community, with proper leadership, particularly from the White House, can be mobilized behind this agreement. Having said that, that will not be enough, as important and critical as it is. It's a base, the right place to start, but the support has to be broader than that. So without those factors coming together, you have the dose of reality that we need here. As I said, you can get a pretty good agreement on this panel for passage of the chorus. But you make the right point. I still remain hopeful and believe it's in the art of the doable, and I say that very sincerely based on my not only strong belief and commitment to trade, belief in the importance of this agreement, but frankly my experience in Washington and the Congress as well.
Yes, sir.
Yes. This trade agreement may indeed be very good, but I think the larger issue, the challenge, is in this, the idea of the storyline. Mm-hmm. Because I get a sense that a lot of Americans don't feel that trade agreements have been particularly good for the United States.
Right.
And Congress has picked up on this.
Yeah.
In fact, Sean and I talked about this. These blue dog Democrats, mm-hmm. Many of whom are against all trade agreements and are proud of it. So I think that a lot has to be done to try to help convince people that NAFTA, for example, that you were involved with, was or is good for America. And until we get over that, then maybe I think people will listen. And learn about how good this particular agreement might be. So it's a big challenge, I think, for all of us to help convince Americans that indeed this is good for America.
Victor?
Well, just a couple of points. The first, I think, is this, as well as the prior question on, you know, what's the value added of the chorus for business lobbies? Is it enough? As Mike said, businesses have many things they deal with when they go to Washington. But the lift on chorus becomes easier, as Max said, once the business community senses that there's real White House leadership on this. And I think we didn't have that at all in the first year of the Obama administration. As everybody knows, non-existent.
Yeah.
And we're beginning to see it now. I mean, it's just the beginning, but we're beginning to see it. And that's a much better place than where we were at this time last year. I think that's important. The other thing is, you mentioned the Blue Dog Democrats. I mean, they're also the new Democrats, right? The sort of the younger, more centrist Democrats. And, you know, with all respect to Mr. Yale, but after the midterm elections, in which historically standing administrations don't do well, there will be an incentive for an administration to reach out to both Republicans and new Democrats and carve out the center best he can. And that's a political dynamic that we are not aware of now because the elections haven't happened. But it will, I think, become the reality after November. And that's another variable that's at play here.
We saw the changes in the administration very recently, but last year the stimulus package included quite a lot of Buy American provisions, mm-hmm. and protectionism seemed to be mm-hmm. the law of the land. I have to echo what was said before about the auto industry, and especially the United Auto Workers Union, extremely important to the Democratic Party and the current administration. Honestly speaking, I haven't read or heard anything from the White House about the Korea-U.S. Trade Agreement that specifies that it should be ratified as is. All I've heard is we like it, we like a trade agreement with Korea, but it needs to be addressed, it needs to be renegotiated. And if you listen to the Koreans, they're unwilling to renegotiate anything. So it seems, as I hate to be, you know, the glass is half full, but it seems quite dubious in the current political climate here, with ethnic cleansing going on in Arizona and the elections coming up. It's kind of scary out there.
Let me. I think the president has indicated that we need further consultations.
Yep. Yep.
To try to resolve some problems both domestically in the United States and with Korea. Mr. Ambassador, he just characterized the Korean position. Would you?
Well, that's right. But the different thing is that, for example, there's only one industry who are objecting against this agreement. That is automobile industry. Some beef, but the issue is not legally speaking directly related with free trade agreements, because the relating point of beef with this free trade agreement is we are eliminating 40% tariff on imported beef into Korea. So it's a tremendous improvement of U.S. beef gaining competitiveness over Australia or any other countries. So the real complaints are coming from the automobiles, and we are willing to do some consultations. Of course, the final outcome should be more creative and mutually acceptable, because we have also our political problems. So we are not totally rejecting any kind of consultations between the two governments. But one thing is clear, as I said, in this automotive industry-related provisions and parts, all those institutions, like 8% tariff elimination on the part of Korea and 2.5% tariff elimination on the part of U.S., definitely will bolster leveling the playing field. And also a kind of dispute settlement mechanisms and safeguards called, reinstating the 2.5% tariff again if Korea is in violation of the agreements, and the standing monitoring mechanisms of U.S. automobile complaints, like automobile working group. So all those elements of these agreements will be tremendously helpful to the U.S. automobile industry. But we know that U.S. automobile industry may think that these are not sufficient, and we are willing to have the consultations with the U.S. governments on that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. APEC has been mentioned several times. If we lived in a perfect world, BOGO goals would come into effect and we'd have free and open trade and investment this year. However, it's not a perfect world. And what I'm wondering is if Ambassador Han could bring us up to date in terms of the FTAs that are being within Asia that are being negotiated. I'm thinking of China ASEAN, Korea ASEAN, Japan ASEAN, and possibly China, Korea, Japan to some degree. These are all powerful arguments for an FTA, leaving the U.S. to play catch-up if these things actually take hold. So from your perspective as a economist and a participant, what is the status of the various FTAs within Asia, and how does the U.S. Korea FTA fit into that broader picture? Thank you.
Well, at present, I should say that many free trade agreements are more individualistic, bilateral, I should say. But of course, we have a new negotiations starting with TPP, which includes about seven countries now, including the United States there, Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore, Vietnam, and Peru, and so on. but most of them are more bilateral one. Of course, with ASEAN, we have concluded agreements, and China concluded agreements. And on a bilateral basis, Korea is studying the feasibility of our negotiation with China, and China, Japan, Korea are also doing some studies until 2012. By 2012, they will complete the study and decide whether they will go into the negotiation and so on. So in Asia, most of the countries think it is very important for their growth, for their people, and for their jobs to increase their trade with as many countries as possible. So Korea is one of them. And in all that kind of processes, most of the Asian countries at the same time, excluding maybe a few countries, that U.S. will be very strongly engaged in Asia, where trade and growth are most rapid globally. So we need more U.S. engagements, and Korea-U.S. free trade agreements will be a kind of a litmus test for U.S. governments, whether they really think it's very serious. Yes, they do, but to show to other, you know, countries who are waiting for that kind of free trade negotiations. And I would like to add that President Obama and President Lee are having a very good conversations concerning trade and enlarged U.S. engagements in Asia, and of course on Korea-U.S. free trade agreements. But we understand the political situations here, and President Obama also understands some of the potential political situations in Korea. That's why they are working together and they are making their efforts more enlarged for making these free trade agreements to be put into effect as fast as possible, as early as possible.
Yes, down at the end of the room, lady.
I'm Richard Rades from Russell & Company. Let me play devil's advocate and ask why we need a free trade agreement. Now, I've noticed the European Union is not stationing 29,000 troops in South Korea so that North Korea is deterred from invading because it would automatically be embroiled in a war with the United States. I've noticed that China has not really put the screws on North Korea to civilize its behavior a bit. The reason that South Korea only spends 2.5% of its GDP on defense is because the United States is in the background with whatever we're spending of our GDP on defense. Why wouldn't it be in South Korea's strategic interest to say, look, forget about a free trade agreement. We want to give the U.S. preferential access to the South Korean market. We want U.S. companies to invest here. We want you to export to this market and forget about a free trade agreement where, you know, we're getting fought tooth and nail about automobile exports and whatever else.
That's a very good point, but politically, I think it'll be difficult. Because free trade agreements is a kind of more reciprocal. Although, in the end, Korea eliminates more higher tariffs and more higher, you know, non-tariff barriers, while U.S. is eliminating, you know, lower level of tariffs and maybe none of the non-tariff barriers because U.S. is already quite an open economy. But to persuade Korean people to eliminate very high protective regime on agriculture, for example, we should have some story to tell. Just the saying that because U.S. forces are here, we should give the preferential access. Preferential access was always construed as one mechanism where poor countries are being given by the rich countries. not by Korea to the United States. So we should have some binding framework and institutions to let our Korean institutions to be more developed and more modernized, while U.S. businesses can enjoy the more open markets in Korea.
Let me just add that I think this agreement does give the U.S. preferential access to the Korean market, and a failure to gain its approval in Congress will actually will give us less access to the Korean market than perhaps some other countries would get. Lady in the back there. Can you use the mic, please, and identify yourself?
Dorothy Hawk, lawyer. I'd just like to comment. I support ratification of Korea's FTA, especially because it affords opportunities for Korean immigrants, enable them to have more positive self-image and shoulder more social responsibilities. Just last week, I had a chance to speak with Professor Annette Gordon Reed, author of Hemings, The Slave Line, Descendant of Thomas Jefferson, and remarked that Korean Americans share a feeling of invisibility similar to free blacks in antebellum period. This kind of invisibility serves tremendous abuse. While I was at Simpson Thatcher, an administrator told me volume of Korean work is just not there, and when they are, they operate in Hong Kong office, out of hotel rooms in Seoul. And when I was at Cornell, there were time, I'm just coming program, but leaving out Korea altogether. Korea's FTA would give a legal framework to conduct more business and engage in more business activities and enable Americans to talk more Korean, Korean Orients and talk with.
Thank you very much. I share your sentiments exactly. We do want to see more American opportunities in Korea. Yes, sir. Nick?
I actually have a question.
Oh, good. Of someone else, I hope.
Other than Nick Brandt with Lazard, member of the Korea Fund Board, other than some of the issues which have touched on, we've touched on, I wonder if the panel could highlight and summarize for us what they think the remaining hurdles are for passage of the FTA. I understand that a dysfunctional area like Europe has been able to sign an FTA with Korea. So what is it fundamentally that's stopping us?
I think that some of the commitments and faith by members of Congress toward trade, that is most important. In Europe, there's a very widespread consensus that trade matters to Europe. But here in the United States, while United States is the largest exporter of goods and services in the world, and about 50 million people are directly or indirectly related with trade in terms of their jobs. Still at the Congress, this trade is still a divisive agenda, so-called, and always like our previous chief of staff, always should agonize on what kind of priority he should give to the agenda when new president comes in. While because of this kind of misperception about trade, some bad experiences with a particular country, and that kind of bad experiences was really conspicuous. So all trade are subsumed under that conspicuous, you know, misperception cases. Then, in general, trade was seen as a kind of things, the matter of the problem, you know, source of the problem, not a source of the resolution. But in this case, at this time of U.S. economy, this free trade agreement, especially with Korea, is a real stimulus package to increase job creations without any increasing fiscal deficit. That's what we would like to say.
Let me, that sounds like a very good note to conclude on, but let me first, before concluding, ask the other panel members if they have any final comments they would like to make.
No, I'd just like to reiterate on behalf of our company our support and continued involvement in the various efforts that we're engaged in to get this across the line.
First, I very much enjoyed and considered it a privilege to be part of this program and time to work directly with you. It's the right thing to do. We just need to figure out exactly how to get it done as soon as possible.
I think one of the things that we really need is someone like Mac McClarty as the chief of staff. That's one thing. The other thing is, while Congress is a hurdle, just from an academic perspective, you know, there has been research that has been done that shows that there is no statistically significant correlation between politicians and how they vote on free trade agreements and whether they are rewarded or punished by their electorate in the subsequent election. And this has been done with CAFTA and NAFTA and a variety of other ones. So that's what the academic research shows, but academic research is not politics.
Ambassador, any final word?
Tours, more communications with members of Congress, and more op-eds in the newspaper. That will be very, very effective.
Let me ask you all to thank you again for coming today and ask you to join me in a round of applause. Thank you.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you for listening to this Korea Society podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for information about memberships and to learn more about all the programs available at the Korea Society.